charge the people a dollar and a half just to see them. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paid
for those words. Don't it always seem like you don't know what you got till it's gone? We wonder about this beautiful, healthy planet of ours that is increasingly a little less healthy, and what that's going to mean to all species, including the endangered human species. I'm talking with Elizabeth Culbert, who is writing about these issues and some of the threats and some of the opportunities in her, not only her great series of articles for the New Yorker magazine, but also Field Notes from a Catastrophe, which you're talking about now that it's in paperback release. When you visit bookstores and speak to audiences, which of those stories do you pull out of the book that you enjoy telling and that get a response from your audience?
Well, the story that sort of started me on the whole project is still, in many ways, the most vivid and I think most moving story, and it's this tiny little island. An island, I should add, shaped much like the island of Manhattan, which attracted me to it. It's an Inupiat village called Shishmaref. And what has happened is, due to a combination of factors, mainly the fact that the sea ice, the Arctic sea ice, comes in later and later, or sometimes, really, to be honest, these days doesn't come in at all. The town is very vulnerable to storms now. It sort of used to have a layer of sea ice that sort of surrounded it from the late fall or mid-fall to the late spring, and it protected it from these storms that come in. And as a result, the island is just literally disappearing. You know, that's the only way to describe it. It's just being eaten away, and you can see that very clearly when you're there. And they voted to move. So this whole town, which has been there for sort of as a seasonal camp, at least for hundreds and hundreds of years, will be gone, and a way of life will be gone with it. And I think that that really does touch people when they hear this story. And these people definitely stand for all of us because, you know, a way of life that sustained them for hundreds of years, and really, if you go back, you know, for thousands of years, is just going to be gone as a result of climate change. And I think that that's a very moving story.
And you're visiting California during a very wicked storm on the East Coast, and Long Island, Manhattan are getting flooded. And you see these pictures on TV and you think, oh my gosh, is this the beginning?
Yeah. I mean, I think that, as I mentioned, you know, this island is just a long, skinny island shaped like Manhattan, where I grew up. And we're
on the bay here in San Francisco.
Exactly.
It's not just Bangladesh, although they'll be harder hit than, you know, the San Francisco Bay Area, but it's coastal waters everywhere.
Right. And if you look at maps of New York, which I'm most familiar with, you know, lower Manhattan is very low, and it could be easily flooded as sea levels rise and as you get these increasingly intense storms.
Did you see the 60 Minutes piece about 3 weeks ago on the penguin population in Antarctica being diminished pretty severely because of a 1 degree change in ocean temperature that affects the sea krill population, which the penguins feed on? And, you know, now the polar bears have another, you know, cute creature that we can identify with and try to save, but it's not going to stop there. That's just what we're seeing. They're the canaries in the mine because they're at the extremes.
Well, I talk about this, you know, a lot in the book, and you don't have to go to the poles these days to see creatures where, you know, the food web, and these things can be hard to predict. They're not necessarily what you'd expect, and many biologists will tell you, we just don't know. But all of these, you know, creatures that are at the top of a long food chain, well, if something's climate sensitive, very climate sensitive, and the climate starts changing, you know, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that the creatures on top of that are going to be severely impacted. And as you mentioned, that is exactly, you know, what we are seeing.
You wrote about what's happening to our oceans. That was perhaps the darkest account I've seen of it. And how did that leave you feeling as a mother?
Yeah, well, that was sort of the other side of the global warming story, which I have to say I'm surprised hasn't gotten more attention, to be honest.
I agree.
I wrote that piece, but I've seen some others, but it hasn't gotten the kind of front page news treatment that it deserves. And that's about this phenomenon, which is called ocean acidification. And what happens is when you dissolve CO2 in the ocean, which you do just by emitting it into the air, you basically are pumping it into the oceans because of, you know, the equilibrium that the oceans eventually reach with the air, you create a weak acid. CO2 dissolved in water is a weak acid. It's like what you get in Coke. It's a weak acid, but it is an acid, and it changes the chemistry of the water. And, you know, think about all of the tiny organisms in the water that are very, very sensitive to that. That goes back to some creatures are very temperature sensitive, and some creatures are very pH sensitive. So
and shells being affected.
Exactly. And what you really see is the formation of shells. And shells, you know, I didn't even realize this, so I will share this with your audience because people are not aware of it. You know, shells are not just formed by oysters. You know, they're formed by these tiny microscopic organisms that are at the bottom of the food chain. And if some of those drop out, you know, you will change the composition of the ocean. You'll change the food chain. So people talk about, you know, this collapsing of the food chain and this phenomenon that has become known very unscientifically as the rise of slime, you know, an ocean just filled with slime.
At the end of your book, you take off your journalism hat and put on your human being, mother, concerned citizen of the planet hat, and talk about how it seems impossible to imagine that a technologically advanced society could choose to destroy itself, but that is what we are now in the process of doing. I guess Amory Lovin's famous optimism didn't rub off too much on you, and understandable that it might not have penetrated.
Well, I should say, in Amory's defense, I didn't meet Amory until after my book came out, but I'm afraid I would stand by the conclusion of the book. In fact, you know, almost 2 years have passed since I wrote that sentence, and it appeared in The New Yorker, and I labored over it, and I worried over it, but I do stand by it, and only more and more information has come out, and yet our response is, you know, completely incommensurate with the threat at hand.
Elizabeth Colbert, it's been a pleasure, if I can say that, given the grim nature of the topic, speaking with you. Certainly a thrill to meet you. Field Notes from a Catastrophe, I highly recommend it. And of course, you can read her fabulous and very comprehensive and understandable and quite readable articles in New Yorker magazine. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
You're listening to EcoTalk on the Air America Radio Network.